I'm Christine Dean, and this is Live from Studio A. And joining us today for the first time is a duo called The Lowest Pair, and they are from a couple of different places. Well, it sounds like you guys are based in the Twin Cities right now, but Kendall Winter has been out in Olympia, Washington for a while, and Palmer T. Lee is based in Minneapolis. So welcome, guys.
Thank you.
And Kendall, it sounded like, but you've been spending some time in Minneapolis lately?
Yeah, we recorded in Minneapolis in July, and we've been kind of passing through fairly regularly. And we have a residency at the 331 there this month, so we're there for the weekdays of each week.
Okay. Well, let's hear a song, and then we'll come back and find out more about you guys and this project. What do you want to start with here?
I think we're going to play an old-time tune called Say Darlin' Say.
Won't you marry me down in the holler neath the old oak tree? Say, darling, say, down in the holler will make us a home, nevermore this world to roam. Say, darling, say, down in the holler neath the old oak tree, baby's bouncing on daddy's knee. Say, darling, say. Starch and iron, say, darling, say. Starch and iron would be a trade, and I'd get drunk and lay in the shade. Say, darling, say. Won't you marry me down in the holler neath the old oak tree? Say, darling, say. Say, little darling, won't you marry me down in the holler neath the old oak tree? Say, darling, say. Say, darling, say. Say, darling, say. Say, darling, say. Say, darling, say.
That's The Lowest Pair live from Studio A. Very nice, very nice. Well, so you each have done your own separate projects. It sounds like you, Palmer, you have been in Boys in the Barrels, mm-hmm. and now that's a band out of the Twin Cities, right?
Yep. String band out of Minneapolis. Yeah.
Okay, and then Kendall, who's retuning over there, so we're
right
letting
now,
her do that.
She came out of a string band background. Also, used to play with the Blackberry Bushes out of Olympia.
Okay, yeah. Okay, but she's also done a bunch of solo stuff.
Yeah, she's got a handful of solo records out on K Records,
which is an independent label out of Olympia, right?
Yes.
That's kind of
well
known in you know.
Yeah, I used to listen
some
to
circles
it out of Arkansas when I was growing up there.
Oh yeah,
so it's pretty exciting to joined forces with them when I got back to Olympia, or mm-hmm. got out to Olympia.
Mm-hmm. And you said you were out there for, what, 3 years? Something like that? Or did you say longer?
I've been in Olympia for a decade.
Oh, a
now.
Decade. Okay, yeah. I think I just heard you wrong earlier. Okay.
That was my Arkansas mumbling.
And so what has it been like for you out there? Probably pretty good since you're putting out albums on K and all of that stuff.
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, I moved out there right after high school, and I grew a lot. I didn't play the banjo yet. I picked up a banjo actually out in Olympia. I played in punk groups and started the string band. We all kind of started off as beginners and grew together, and it's great. Olympia's a wonderful place to grow.
What drew you to the banjo?
I love the way it sounds. I think I heard it growing up in Arkansas, but I never even occurred to me that I could play it. And I think maybe being away from the South and away from that being a regular sound that I was hearing, I think I kind of just found that it was a really easy instrument to get really satisfying sounds out of.
How about you, Palmer? What drew you to the banjo? And what was your first instrument?
Well, I played guitar for about 6 months before I inherited a couple of banjos and never looked back after that. I realized like how interesting of a tinkerer's instrument it is. You know, I was able to take these two banjos that I inherited apart and put the parts back together in a way that created a banjo that I liked better than either of the ones that I had gotten. I thought that was a really, really neat deal. And some friends of mine had just turned me on to like the Jerry Garcia, David Grisman tapes from the early 90s. And they were just doing all folk songs, just the two of them, mandolin and guitar with a little bit of banjo on there. And I just, from then on, just went headfirst into folk music and...
Okay.
Yeah.
So how did the two of you start working together as the lowest pair?
Well, we heard each other in our string bands in 2009 at the Boats and Bluegrass Festival in Winona.
I've heard a lot about that
it's
from people that have
festival.
Passed through, yeah.
It's
yeah.
an incredible festival. Mm-hmm. That was my first time.
It's everybody's favorite once they go there. That's mm-hmm. their favorite festival.
That was my first time there, and I think I've been there every year since. I saw him play and liked his voice and liked his style, and... we kind of jammed around a campfire with a bunch of folks that night, and then this year I think both of us just were in a place where we could start a new project, and
so we hit the road before we even had a set list, and the rest is history. We worked up the project for about a month, and then we spent about a month recording our debut record in August, and we've just been on the road ever since. And
Are you doing mostly traditional tunes that you had done in other projects, or how did you arrive at, are you writing songs?
The album is all original material, either from Kendall or me, or I. We haven't really done much writing together. We have some really exciting strategies in mind for this winter. We got some downtime in January and February. We're going to try out this thing called the 20 song game, where you hold up for 12 hours and try to write 20 songs, and just really start... working out the kinks of trying to like co-write with somebody, you know, because that can be a really complicated process at times. Sometimes it can go really well, sometimes it just doesn't work, you know. So we're kind of like still kind of feeling it out a little bit.
But yeah, we both have a big pool of our original songs that we're choosing from right now, and yeah, we're trying to keep the traditional stuff going just because we're trying to grow on our instruments, and it's a really beautiful way to connect with musicians all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose, because you're all kind of passing around different songs, and there's
yeah.
songs that everybody
in the country.
Knows.
Yeah, exactly, mm-hmm. and there's songs everybody knows.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd love to record a old-time record at some point, but, you know, somewhere down the line, that'd be fun.
Well, it sounds like you're already, you know, full speed ahead with, you know, doing a first album pretty quickly, and so I think you got time.
Yeah, right. We need to do it now.
And you recorded the album with Dave Simonette of Trampled by Turtles. Did you just know him from various shows and things down in the cities?
Yeah, I don't recall how we originally met. But my string band, Boys and Barrels, has played a few shows with them.
And he produced that album too, right?
Yeah, he produced our last record. That's right. Yep. So that was my first chance really getting to work with him. And that was really fun. He had some really helpful insights. So it was really nice to get back into the studio with him and work with him again.
Mm-hmm. And where did you guys record?
In his basement, which is called...
Suburban Dad Studios is Suburban what they call it. Yeah, he's building a studio down there in his basement. It was really...
It was great. It was really relaxed. Felt really good. We recorded it all together, just the two of us and singing and everything.
Yeah, so it's all live and pretty raw.
How many songs?
I think 11 made the cut.
We took two off. We took the two that we were expecting to be our number one singles off at the end, because we were like, well, we just want to wait for them. We want to give them some time to learn how to play guitar on. And
yes, because there are very few number one singles that involve banjos, I don't think, as the lead instrument.
Right.
Although, probably some, but
and how dueling about two banjos.
Right. Dueling banjos did really well.
Right.
So I don't know if it hit number one, but that was pretty popular with folks.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear another song. And that album comes out in January, right?
Yeah, We might wait for the okay to maybe sell it out of the trunk of our car while we're still playing shows and stuff like that, if the label lets us do that. But the official release is January 14th.
Oh, so it's on, what label is it on?
It's on Team Love Records out of New Paltz, New York.
Okay. You know, and I should have known that, because I was actually getting emails about it, and I thought, well, these guys are, I'm getting emails from promoters about this band, so they must actually, they got something going there.
That's right. Awesome. Yeah. Thank you.
That's right. I had forgotten that I was getting those from Team Love. That's right. Well, so how did that happen? Was that a fairly easy thing to?
We met Nate from Team Love out. He does a sessions out in New York called the Tin Roof Sessions, and he had heard my solo project and invited us out, and we had just gotten started, so we went out with the duet. We were already heading out to New Brunswick for a festival up there in August.
September. Yeah, we did the East Coast in September.
And so we just went through, and we had a really nice time, and we said, well, hey, we should send you what we recorded. We're pretty excited about it, and maybe you're interested in helping us do something with it. And he was like, okay. And it was fairly organic.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear another song. Is this one that's going to be on the album?
It is, yep.
This one's called Magpies at Sunset.
Trying to forget, oh, trying to forget.
fields I was led
to the river. Wash away my sin.
Wash away my sin. Oh, wash away my sin.
Headed to the river. Wash away my sin.
The Lowest Pair, live from Studio A. Tell me about the name. How'd you come up with the Lowest Pair?
The Lowest Pair. Well, we were both banjo players, songwriters, knowing that going into it. And our best, our favorite, most inspirational banjo player, songwriter we could think of was Mr. John Hartford. So we started thinking, like, maybe we should come up with a John Hartford tribute, and started thinking of song names. And so we had all these different things, like Tall, Tall Grass and The Good Old Days and all these great John Hartford songs. And The Lowest Pair was the one that stuck, you know. It's kind of, humble and kind of funny and...
Doesn't give us too much to have to live up to.
And there's two of you.
Right.
Nice. So John Hartford is a common musical influence you guys have. Anybody else that you both are kind of, hey, I really...
Gillian Welsh, for sure. Towns Van Zandt. Bob Dylan, lots of just the great songwriters, the songs that can last and will last forever just because they're good.
And I'm going to assume that you wrote that last one, Kendall, since you were singing the lead on it.
Yeah, I wrote that one in Austin in March.
Do you remember what inspired it or how it came about?
Well, I was running around the Colorado River, which goes right through Austin, and there's a bird there called the grackle, and... the grackle is like a big crow that laughs and makes siren sounds, and I don't know, it's kind of an alarming sound, and so I was kind of feeling laughed at as I was running along this muddy river. And I had just come from Montana with Sarah Calhoun from Red Ants Pants, and we had left her cat, actually, named Magpie, up in White Sulphur Springs, and there's also magpies all up there, so kind of like just the traveling across the country and trying to just clean off my own conscience and get ready for next things coming.
You know, I heard somebody say, I think it might have been Steve Martin, that the banjo is the happiest instrument. But I've always thought of it as the most melancholy instrument.
Yeah.
So what do you think? Is it happy, melancholy, both?
I think there's always that challenge to make a sad... Well, I've heard you can't sing a sad song on the banjo, but
yeah,
totally
I don't know
disagree.
About that. Yeah, I think it's a really expressive instrument. Yeah, just as expressive as anything else, really. But I think that there's a really, you know, popular... Bluegrass is a really popular approach for it, and the rolls that you get and the licks that you use to fit into the bluegrass uniform tends to lean itself to more of like a driving... you know, it's dance music, you know. I mean, they do gospel tunes and things like that, but it's funny how often the banjo is left out of those gospel tunes, you know. We're just doing backup the whole time.
So how do you guys approach, you probably each have your own approach to it, but there's all sorts of different styles for the banjo, the clawhammer and this and that and the other thing. Have you tried traditional styles? Do you just develop your own style, each of you, on how you play the banjo?
I've definitely studied some traditional styles, and I think... You can't help but impose your own style on it. I think it's a really... Banjo, more than any other instrument, I've studied specific techniques, but then it's just nice to have it as a part of your, like, crayon box to use. And then, you know, sometimes when I'm practicing, I just see what I accidentally fall upon and try to create that again. And that's a good way to practice also.
And how about you, Palmer?
Yeah, I kind of approached it a little bit backwards. You know, my first couple banjo instructors were very non-traditional, both prolific jazz players. So I kind of started off like sort of teaching myself and having sort of these weird influences, and then later it was like, man, I really wish I could play that Scruggs lick, or man, I really wish I had like a solid clawhammer style or a solid Keith style melodic style or something. And so now I'm just struggling to get those things worked in tight enough to be able to use them, you know. And I guess, you know, that's like, it's an ongoing life journey, I suppose. You know, it's not so much always a struggle, but sometimes it feels like it's a struggle. coming at it from the back door.
It almost sounds like you guys are kind of in the same place as far as, you know, trying to get better on your instrument. I mean, not that you're not good, but you know what I mean? Like, you know, you're playing this instrument and you're trying to learn different techniques and different things. And
yeah, you never want to be done with mm-hmm. learning. I don't think you ever want to be as good at what you do as you're ever going to be, because that would be kind of boring. So I do think we both have that nice kind of zealousness, aspiration
to to learn and develop. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting seeing what happens with the project as we both keep growing. And you know, Kendall's a great climber player as well as a great fingerstyle player. And you know, a couple months ago she was like, man, I really wish I played more fingerstyle in this band. So I'm like, okay, I'm trying to work out my climber licks. So, you know, we're both kind of pushing each other a lot in that way, you know. And I'm having to learn how to flat pick a guitar and stuff, just to sort of get, we play a fair amount of guitar in our sets, just to kind of change it up sonically, you know.
Not exhaust the listener.
Right.
Two banjos coming at you.
And it's a whole other thing that you get out of it, writing a song on a guitar. You know, different things just sort of happen.
Okay. How about, what was it like musically when you were growing up, Kendall, in your house in Arkansas? Did you have instruments around or music?
I did,
or?
Yeah. My mother is an orchestra teacher and my father is a low brass professor.
Oh, okay.
And so I had a lot of music, a lot of classical music coming at me. My sister and I were orchestra brats, and we used to just kind of fall asleep in the pit in Little Rock at the concerts or in the back, and got dragged to a lot of concerts we weren't that excited about, but I think definitely had an influence on me. And my mom got me a guitar when I was probably around 13 or 14 for Hanukkah one year, and I kind of just sat around, but she had dulcimers around and just like folk instruments, and they just kind of were around the house.
Were there any banjos around, or that?
No, there were no banjos.
It's kind of funny how that works. You kind of find your own thing.
At some point,
you have this background, but then, well, I'm going to do this.
And my dad paid me $50 to play the French horn in high school, which wasn't that great with braces.
Oh boy, I bet.
$50 for the whole time?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It was a lot then. Deal.
Yeah.
How about you, Palmer? Where did you grow up, first of all?
I grew up in Farmington.
Oh, okay.
About 40 miles south of Minneapolis.
Okay.
And, my mom played piano in church. My dad used to be, a song and dance man back in college and whatnot. He had a gig working at theme parks and stuff like that. Played some trombone. So there's music there. And my great-grandfather was a great fiddle player on my mom's side. And so there's kind of all these little pieces of music. And I tried a few things out, tried cello and baritone horn when I was in elementary school and junior high and stuff like that. Did a lot of choir and stuff, and I always wanted to be like a singer in a band, but never, I don't know. I was kind of convinced that I couldn't play guitar, you know, that sort of mentality, like my fingers just don't do it, you know, which I hear all the time now, and I think it's hilarious because I was totally there. It's just about, you know, the discipline and the dedication and deciding you're going to do it, I guess.
Yeah. All right. Well, what do you guys want to finish up with here?
I think we're going to play, this is a song called Living is Dying. And Spin actually just did, I think it's our single on this new record, 36 Cents. And Spin just did a debut for it.
A little blurb. And you can stream it online at spin.com.
And why is the album called 36 Cents?
I really like that number. It's a lucky number to me. And we had made some patches with the screen print that had a picture of a pear and 36 cents on it, because it looks kind of like a stamp.
Yeah, it looked like a stamp. So I was like, you should just write 36 cents down the bottom and it'll look like a stamp.
And then we just liked the way it looked. We printed it on a dirty napkin and liked the way it looked. And that's the cover. But it's a difficult name because it's actually quite difficult to find the cents symbol.
Right. Alt-4 on a Mac or... on PCs, it's like Alt-1455 or something random like that.
So I find
that,
myself so avoiding
good
the
luck
title
when I'm
blurbing about it.
Because you're trying to remember how to make it on the computer. Yeah. All right. Well, so what was the tune before
Living is Dying.
All right. Living is, and is this one from the album?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
little boy blue, blowing his horn. The cat's in the cradle this silver morn, tucking in for his tie.
Living is living, living is dying.
Fireflies flickering in the field, boys catching them lit, tearing the tail, spreading the glow on the windshield.
Living is living, living is dying.
Off the property.
Living is living, living is dying.
Lois Pair live from Studio A, and another one from their forthcoming album, 36 Cents, that comes out on January 14th. And that's kind of the first single. Exciting. You guys have a single? Well, thank you so much, guys. It was a pleasure to meet you and hear you. Great stuff.
Yeah, likewise.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And if people want more information on The Lois Pair, you have a website, thelowispair.com. You're on Facebook. You're on Twitter. You got
doing
all the bases
thing
covered.
Yep.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.